Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. It's where community grows.
The Filipino American National News is proud once again to have on the show former player in the Philippines and coach in the Philippines, Alex Compton. Welcome back to the show, Alex.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me on. And I apologize for the setting of my very professional car right now, but it is basketball season, which means I have three kids and six teams and a lot of driving. So I'm in my car.
When we last spoke in 2021, you talked about the importance of choosing a school for a student athlete where obviously they're really also concentrated on the education part of it. And it's not necessarily about going to a Power Five program, but going to a program where you're able to grow and you're able to get playing time. I feel like I'm going to get a unique answer adding an updated part to this question. How do you think NIL has affected this? Positive or a negative in terms of how student athletes are choosing where to go to school these days?
So, money is just a thing. It's just a thing. But money can help make people a little bit crazy. And I'm not talking about student athletes. And my concern is usually going to be the sharks more than the kids, right? Who's guiding the kids versus the kids. So that's going to be my primary concern. But with NIL, what I think is it was ridiculous before in the NCAA that you had guys like, man, I remember my freshman year, Christmas, St. Joe's, we had 2 days off, right? Which means the cafeteria is closed on campus, which means, all right, so time to go eat. Well, we had some 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", dudes who ate. And our coach, he didn't play. Like, we ran. We lifted. It was hard. We were getting after it. So guys were hungry. And our meal money was $25 a day. And those guys didn't have enough food for what they were burning and how big they were on the $25 a day. Now, St. Joe's is just a mid-major, right? We weren't one of the big boys. But my understanding, what an assistant athletic director had told me just in conversation, was that our basketball program and the small gym that we had funded the scholarships for the other programs. So there were a lot of people in a mid-major with a gym of like 3,000 people that were getting scholarships because of what we netted as a basketball team. And if anybody had given one of my guys a burger, it would have been an NCAA violation. Now, that's a little ridiculous, isn't it?
Yes.
That doesn't seem right. You know, you get – and I just like would love to point out the hypocrisy of how – you remember the Ohio State players who sold their jerseys for tattoos? They were treated like criminals. Like, are you kidding me? Ohio State football built the Ohio State University like a $77 million library 1 year. And those kids couldn't sell their jerseys. Like it was illegal, right? I understand the rules. But so I think that the NCAA needed to make the change. I think it's right if a guy's bringing in all kinds of money. Now, bottom line, I think we need a CBA. I've been saying this since it started. I'm like, oh, this is going bad. It's the Wild Wild West. So, I mean, I got friends here. I got a friend who's an assistant coach at Wisconsin. I got another friend who's a head coach of the tennis team at Wisconsin. Got another friend who's head coach at Pepperdine. Got another friend. Anyways, got friends in college sports. And I just keep telling them, guys, since 2021, like, I know it's not on you. I totally get it. But we need a CBA. So here's my proposal. Maybe, Alan, you can use your influence to get it out there and affect change nationwide. So the thing that's unique about college sports is you get to know the players growing up. You get to see them. So when I was in high school and I'd go to the college gym to shoot, like the little gym where like non-Badger players played, you know who's in there all the time as a freshman after practice? A guy named Michael Finley. You know what he's good at doing as a freshman? Dunking. That's what he's good at doing. Mike could jump and he could dunk. He didn't have great handles. He didn't have a great shot. But man, Mike worked and he worked and he worked. And I'd play with those guys in the summer and I, you know, and then each time he's like, man, Mike's getting better. Man, Mike's getting better. And then going into his junior year, Mike's really getting better. And then like that summer, he was kind of the man on the Pan Am games. And then Mike averaged like 20 a game in the Big Ten. And then is like a 15, 14, 16, whatever he was drafted. And then he has this incredible NBA career. People in Wisconsin love that because they remember when Mike was this 18-year-old jumping jack and they saw the work that he put in. And you become emotionally attached to a guy like that. Good guy, quiet guy, does the work, puts his head down, represents team well, does a lot, grows, gets out there, and you're like, yeah, he's ours, right? Like, that's a Badger right there, man. And we're losing that. So if we had a CBA and we say, Alan is a freshman at the University of Wisconsin. Well, you're from Minnesota. Freshman at the University of Minnesota. Yeah. Oh, you're at Minnesota because you couldn't get into Wisconsin. I get it. Okay. So Alan.
We have a hero brother going to St. Thomas over here. So.
So okay. So Alan's at Minnesota, and he's making, I'll make up a number, 100 grand a year, right? I don't know what the numbers are. Let's just make up a number. You're making 100 grand a year. Now, eligibility-wise, you can transfer anywhere you want. But if you transfer to any other school, Big Ten, not Big Ten, let's say you're like a huge Gonzaga guy. If you go to Gonzaga, you can make $130,000 a year your sophomore year. If you stay at Minnesota, you can make $190,000. right? You incentivize the staying. Mm-hmm. You incentivize on a lower level, maybe like kids who make a dean's list, kids who make the honor roll, kids who graduate on time. They get bonuses, right? But you set up that structure much like the NBA. What was the Larry Bird rule for a while? If you stay and sign with your team, you can make more money. So if we'd have that, then the thing that makes college sports special is, you know, we have a Minnesota guy in Wisconsin who's like epitomized what Michael Finley did, which is a guy named Brad Davison. He's like, everybody saw him. They saw him work on his game. Like, hey, this kid's got potential. He works hard. And then he played for a bunch of years here, and now he's back and he's coaching. And it's like, he's one of our guys because you know him. Because it's not like, who's our new mercenary list?
I mean, we might let you keep Brad Davison.
I think he's got career like 48 charges drawn against the Gophers alone. So, but yeah, he's the whole point is like what sets college sports apart is that's one of our guys, my alma mater, right? That's my alma mater. So that's my opinion. There has to be, if it's the Wild Wild West, it just gets uglier and uglier. And honestly, I was just telling a friend this today. I don't think until it hurts the pocketbook of the big boys upstairs that, like, we're losing market share. People aren't coming to games. People aren't. It's because you've lost the college atmosphere. That's where it's going. You can keep the college atmosphere and pay guys. But the transfer portal, that's nuts. The Wild Wild West, the bidding war, that's nuts. You're going to lose the market. I don't, you know, a friend of mine's an assistant coach at the Badgers. I've been to their practices before. I want them to do well. I'm not anywhere near as interested as I used to be because of the just crazy turnover. So.
Well, let's keep it lighthearted before we close out this interview. You've been back in the States for roughly four to 5 years. When you came back, was there something that you realized that you missed? And now that you're here, you're like, wow, I really appreciate that I have this now that I'm here, whether it be a food or a walk in nature. Is there anything that you've relished since your time back here in the States?
Yeah. I'll tell you, and you just said it, it's the last one. I'll do a little juxtaposition to get literary on you. I love Manila because I love the people and the culture. I'm not a huge traffic fan, but I was a huge fan of my friends, the people, the culture, my history there. Just love so much. You know how I wrote probably at least the stories, the rough drafts of the stories of maybe three quarters of my book was walking through a forest and dictating through my phone. And it was beautiful. And it was peaceful. And I could think. And there weren't distractions. And there's so many different things like that where there's something about being out in nature that you can't get. And I live in Madison. It's like 300,000 people or so, plus minus, whatever. But there's these forests. There's an arboretum in the city. You can drive 10 minutes and you're outside and you're in the middle of nowhere. There's some really cool places nearby that there's just something different about nature. So literally I would dictate stories and just keep producing stories that I thought might fit in with the topics in our book, and then choose from which ones really reflected or tied up well with the research. But walking out and looking at the sky and feeling the breeze and hearing the trees and the crunch under your feet, you don't do that with jeepney sounds all around you, brother.
You were able to go back to the Philippines most recently. How is that coming back to the Philippines in a different context than the previous times you were there? Was it less weight on your shoulder going back there as more as a civilian?
So it's really interesting. It was the year 2000. So I went to the Philippines in 98, and it was the year 2000. that I got on the plane to go home for winter break. And I was like, yes, I'm going home. And I was referring to Madison, Wisconsin. And that same year after Christmas, I got on the plane and I said, yes, I'm going home to Manila. And that was the first time I had that feeling. And so 3 years in, I realized like, oh my gosh, I really consider Manila home and I'm excited to go home the way that I had considered Madison. And so it still feels like going home. You know, like you get through the, I'm going through the line or whatever.
Oh, coach, musta? Anong balita? Oh, ba't wala ka? Anong nangyari?
Right? And you're like, oh, well, you know, you're just having conversations and you're just right back at home, man. You're just right back at home. And so, but now I don't have to run practices and prepare practice plans and deal with the media about why we lost or what blunder I made now. But I just get to see and connect with people that I really love and respect. And so going back to Manila will always be like going home for me.
We spoke about your children. How has the move been for the better half of your relationship for your wife, moving out of the hustle bustle of Manila to the quietness, but still craziness of Madison, Wisconsin?
So it was funny when I got married, that before I got married, people were asking me, it was interesting how much I got this question. Could you marry a girl from the province? And my answer would be always, yes, I can marry a girl from the province as long as she's not provincial in her thinking. Because my life has been so international, I can't say I want to settle in any province of any country. Like I've seen the world. I've been to Europe so many times. I've been to South America. I've been to New Zealand. I've been all over the, I mean, there's so much. I've been all over Southeast Asia. Like there's so much cool to see and do and so many. So sure enough, my wife is from the province, but she's also part Irish, who lived in Ireland for 3 years. And so she's also very international in her thinking. And so she's from kind of two hometowns, Nasipit and Davao. We're very international. So I think the move for her was not shocking. She had lived in Ireland before. She'd been to the U.S. She'd been to the U.S. a few times. She traveled a lot. So I think there's trade-offs, right? So for us, what is good is, walang kasang bahay dito. You don't have house help here. Right. Mm-hmm. The house help, you know who they are? They're the kids and they got to get trained. Right. Which is good for them. I think there's a Harvard study about how people who are successful, it usually ties up a lot to household chores and things they have to do. So that was good. Walang yaya. So, all right, man, you got to do the dishes. Let's go. All right. Come on. We're doing the lawn. My boys were just with me. We're shoveling for, you know, like it's good. It's good for them. At the same time, all that extra work doesn't allow you the freedom of time that you had. And especially with all these activities, like I'm about to pick up one son and take him to basketball while my other son is getting picked up by a friend. I just dropped my daughter off from basketball, right? Like so you get a little busy. So she's doing great. She's teaching. She's doing great. I think the phase of our life, wherever we're at, if we're both working, wherever we'd be living, it'd be like this. Because the kids are old enough where we got to bring them everywhere. It's just how it is.
You're a parent. You're a coach. You spoke of this book that you have out there, Guiding Your Child's Athletic Journey. What advice, whether it be coaching-wise or parenting-wise, that you would give to parents that are going to walk into this world of a student athlete that you feel is important for them to keep in mind when going through this journey?
One is try to plan as much as possible. And what I mean is, like early on, so our first chapter is about values. And that's not because Kevin and I want you to have our values. And Kevin and I have a lot of overlap of values, but each of our families have their own, right? What we encourage you to do is look at and define what are your own values. How do you want to raise your kids? What are the things that you want to be really ingrained in them? Emphasize those things, right? So, for example, in basketball, everybody knows when I was Alaska, I just thought that pressing would give us the best chance to win because nobody did it. It was different. We could play a lot of guys. We could play hard. It gave us a chance to come back in games. It made it exciting to watch. It was hard and it was tiring, but we did. So we emphasized things that had to deal with that. That's who we wanted to be. So the same thing for parents. Who do you want your kids to be? What are you trying to mold? What are your values? Define them clearly. Define them if you're married. Define them with your spouse. Right? Share them with your, if you have parents who help look after your kids at times, share them. What are your values? That's sort of the springboard for everything. And then from there, just remember the sports end. Hopefully the relationship doesn't. So, you know, as we go through this, we can end the relationship. Kevin said something on an interview we were doing in Manila on TV and back in March. And it just kind of came out. It came out beautifully. He said, we don't want our passion to become our child's burden. And I think sometimes in sports, we have such big hopes and dreams for our kids that our passion can become a tremendous weight on them, on their shoulders, on their brains, on their hearts, that they weren't meant to bear. Sports are at their heart a game. Sports is a game. So we want them to learn that. And ultimately, Alan, I think I went through an interesting, challenging experience last year. My dad had a stroke, and we didn't know if he was going to make it. And my dad played small college football in Ohio. He was a good athlete. He was a better person. And he raised us, and we participated in sports. And I have fond sports memories with my dad. But as I was sitting by his bedside, I sent my mom home. He was still unconscious. We didn't know what was going to happen. It's 2 a.m., and I'm basically done with the book, and I have to write the epilogue. And as I'm hearing the beep, beep, beep at 2 a.m. thinking about my dad, I go, oh, my gosh. This is the epilogue. This is it. Someday I'm going to be in a bed like this. And I'm going to be on my last legs. And I want to raise my kids with such intentionality and love and purpose that when they're sitting in the seat that I am currently, that their heart is filled with gratefulness and love towards me. Now, if they play college anything, it doesn't matter if I have that. And ultimately, I think that's, for me, what we're shooting for.
Well, Alex, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. I'm sure that I could talk for hours on life, I guess basketball, since that's the conduit to, as to why we're speaking this evening. If people want to learn more about you or follow your journey and moving forward, where can they find more information about you?
Yeah, so thank you for asking, Alan. I have Instagram now. I am a social media darling. I had no social media. I was so happy not being in the media for so long out here. And then I wrote the book and they're like, you have to have social media, man. So, okay. So we have an Instagram account. It's Alex Compton, USPH. And then there's also one for the book that's called Parenting Athletes. We also have a website, wisestlearners.com. And I didn't even tell you the business that we started that I've been running now with a buddy and a partner in the Philippines for almost 2 years, no, a year and a half now, is called Valor Pro Global. And we help American businesses hire Filipinos for online work. So, we do that as well, but that's what's keeping me busy. So Instagram, you can find me on Alex Compton, USPH, give me a follow and, hopefully I can put out some good content for parents.
Well, one of these days, I know that you have some Minnesota ties. Hopefully one of these days we get you here, whether here in the studio, you visiting or attending the basketball scene here in Minnesota, or me making my way out to Wisconsin and sharing a Guinness with you over there in Madison. or a San Miguel.
There you go. That sounds great, Alan. I'd look forward to that, man.
Thank you for your time tonight. Multitasking like all his parents do, doing an interview in the car, driving your kids all around town, supporting their activities.
Yeah, it's my pleasure being here. Really, it's an honor being on this, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Alex, and have a great evening. Stay safe out there.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Our little Christmas, our little Christmas tree, should we still celebrate when it's just you?
Support for KFAI comes from the Crooner Supper Club, presenting Charmin Sings Carmen, Thursday, January 8th. Carmen McRae's tribute to Thelonious Monk is brought to life by Minneapolis Chanteuse Charmin Michelle. Charmin will be joined in the Dunsmore Jazz Room by Joel Shapira on guitar and Larry McDonald on piano. Shapira and McDonald will open the show with selections from their Bill Evans Jim Hall tribute, Intermodulating Undercurrents. More information about Charmin Sings Carmen is available at croonersmn.com.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Jose Antonio Zayas Caban and Trace Chamber Music Trio with Miguel Zinon Friday, January 16th. Jose Antonio Zayas Caban and Trace welcome special guest Miguel Zinon to the Cedar stage. They'll be featuring selections from Pedacito de Tierra, a genre-defying work that blends chamber music, electronics, and oral histories from the Puerto Rican diaspora, plus works by Puerto Rican composers and music rooted in the rhythms of the Caribbean and the Americas. More information about Jose Antonio Zayas Caban and Trace with Miguel Zinon is available at thecedar.org.